You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Ah, the flowers are blooming, the birds are singing, and KBOO's spring membership drive is back. If you enjoy alternative radio that pushes the status quo, then support KBOO by becoming a member today. Donate online at kboo.fm/give between now and May 25th and support avant-garde airwaves.
Tune into KBOO on Friday, May 10th from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. for the live broadcast of the Blues Carnival, Rhythm in Rio. Rhythm in Rio is a benefit show for healthcare for all Oregon, featuring Norman Sylvester and Bloco Alegria. Again, that's the Blues Carnival Rhythm in Rio, broadcasting live from the Aladdin Theater from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. For more information, check out kboo.fm/bluescarnival2024.
Support for Trans Positive comes from KBOO members and RelationshipGardening.com, specializing in support and repair for couples. Virtual for Oregon and California. Information at couplescoach@gmail.com.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah.
Good evening. You're listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we're talking with Deborah Porta of Pride Northwest about the 2024 Pride Festival. Deborah, welcome to Trans Positive.
Hi, Emma. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, good. Thanks. Well, it's really great having you on the show. It seems like we're doing this at least once a year now, talking about the Pride Festival, and we wanted to get you on early. I know it's still 3 months away, but you know, we just got your press release recently, and we're really excited about the lineup of people who's going to be performing this year, and we just want to kind of hear about what the plans are for Pride now, so people can start to make plans. So, Deborah, could you first introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are?
Sure. My name is Deborah Porta. I use she, they, and I'm executive director for Pride Northwest. I've been with Pride Northwest for a long time. I'm originally from Dallas, Texas. I moved here in 97 and got involved with Pride beginning in 2006. I've worked in higher ed, long work history in the restaurant world, and then when Pride came along, everything went that direction.
I didn't know that you had any other life. I thought you were born like when you were born, like you were raised up by like the Pride Northwest community.
Oh no. I'm a latecomer.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty neat. So you did education before too?
Yeah, I worked in student services at Portland Community College. I worked at Portland State for a while too, but I was in school for a long time and just got hooked. If I weren't doing Pride now, I would be working in higher ed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
see, what I may did you go back to, and eventually teach, but
what did you go to school for?
Well, ultimately, I got my master's degree. When I first went back to school, it was literally to learn a skill to work in an office because I couldn't do my old restaurant work anymore. My body said, nope, not happening. But ultimately, I ended up with a master's in public administration, specializing in nonprofit management.
Oh, neat. So you really got something that you put to use.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
What kind of skills does it take to, you know, serve as, are you the executive director at Pride Northwest? Or
yes. Mm-hmm.
What set of skills does it take to run a large organization like that?
Well, that's interesting. Pride Northwest isn't actually a large organization. We put on a big thing, but there are five of us at this point, including me.
There's only five of you?
Oh yeah, and that's double what it was 2 years ago. But you know, I've always recognized that my first career in restaurant management has served me really well. Customer service, interpersonal communication, this kind of thing has I think served me almost more than anything else has in this role, because so much of what I do is in between deciding how many porta potties we need at the festival. A lot of what I end up doing is relationship connections and relationship building. Event planning was not what I had intended my career to be. Obviously, there's a big part of that. And in all honesty, it feels a lot like the restaurant world, which is just constantly rambunctious. You're always in a rush, right? Mm-hmm. So I have been fortunate to learn from a lot of really good nonprofit folks, especially executive folks, managers, et cetera, that have really helped me along the way. And I feel super fortunate for that. And I also feel really lucky that I was able to connect with some really important, I say important, that's not the right word, sort of trailblazing kind of folks here in the Portland community early on, mm-hmm. that really helped me get grounded in connecting with the community and prioritizing the community and really thinking about how do we build what we want to see together, and just sort of then applying that to Pride and where Pride sits in the community. So I feel really lucky there as well.
Well, now you've really piqued my curiosity, Deborah. So who are some of your queer heroes?
Here in Portland, you've got David Martinez, who's one of the co-founders of, at the time, Portland Latino Pride, now Latinx Pride. Kendall Clausen, Q Center's first executive director. We started our roles. I became board president in the year that she was hired as Q Center's first executive director. And so I learned a lot from Kendall and still do. And, you know, just over the years working with folks like, you know, Ethan and Lyles and Felicia and now working with Ian and Henry and just other folks, it's not so much about who has name recognition for me, because a lot of the original, I say original, a lot of the folks who were in leadership roles when I was coming up, so to speak, have either moved away or moved on. But I learned a lot from them at the time as well. When I first became board president, Black Pride was happening. Brother to Brother was still functioning as an organization. Reverend Prescott was a huge influence. Bonnie Tinker, these other folks. I can tell you right now, my memory is not what it used to be. That's, you know, I was 40 when I started and I am not 40 now.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So yeah, I just kind of, there's just, I've just been really fortunate to, you know, Gita, they're just all these folks that I've been fortunate to engage with and in some cases become friends with and learn from and learn with. So I think that has a lot to do with what I prioritize now.
How many people attend the Pride Festival every year?
Last year, we had somewhere about 65,000
Wow.
in the festival. The parade was, we were almost a little bit afraid that if everybody who signed, if all of the groups were completely full, we were a little afraid of how many people that was going to be. But I think we had 10 to 12,000 people in the parade and about
Oh my
45,000 people on the streets.
So I wanted to ask what all goes into the process of planning the Pride Festival and parade?
How long do we have?
We've got an hour.
It's a year-round planning. It's a beyond year-round planning process at this point. It's everything from negotiating permits with the city to recruiting, orienting, and training volunteers, planning for money management. There's a whole process that goes into designing the waterfront site itself, like where are things going to be placed? What are the where's the water access? Where's the road access? What's the fencing? What's it, all of this logistics stuff? There's tons of that. What does security look like? And all of those things. And a lot of that happens before registration ever opens up because we have to have it ready for people to reserve spaces. And then there's this whole reservation process that happens, and making sure that everyone has all of the details that they need for, with planning load in, load out. What are the festival policies? What's the, what are the gate setups look like? I'm insurance, I've got a We have to get insurance every year, and that's and the festival and the parade is very similar in terms of we have to update and or redesign, which is what we're doing this year, the whole staging area in the North Park blocks where everybody lines up. We have to actually create that process and then decide where everyone needs to be and what time they need to be there and all of that, and then communicate all of that with folks. There's marketing that goes into it. There's all planning for the stages, negotiating with headliners, reviewing and choosing artists, we sub that submit applications, for example, that just opened the end of last week, I think. Because we have a very specific focus on local and regional talent when it comes to Portland Pride. So this is whole process that goes into that. We're convening a review committee, and there's I am sh that's probably about a tenth of all the stuff that goes into it, because I can ramble for a long time. But it's just really a whole lot of chess pieces and, Tetris in a lot of ways of like, okay, this piece has to be in place for that piece. We've got to have the site map ready. We got to sign up all the vendors for who's going to be setting up the stage, who's going to be putting in the fencing, who's going to be bringing the ice. There's a lot of contract stuff that has to start happening. And all of that really starts happening in August. Because this region is a big event region, especially Portland. And so we can't wait very long to start securing who we're going to work with because they may not be available, right? The sound people, for example, they're really in demand. So it's a lot of that, all these moving pieces at one time.
So, Deborah, do you ever like go to other Pride festivals, or are you like, when you're done with this one, you're just like, there's no way I'm going to another Pride festival to see what it's like?
I go when I can. A lot of it is just really about not having time. But I go when I can. I've been to Salem Pride, been to Vancouver Pride a number of times. I'd really love at some point to get down to Bend. But it's we're looking at that actually in terms of our capacity staff wise, because that's one of our goals, is to be able to not just communicate with and support other prides around the region, but to actually go to and be part of. And that just takes people doing. I go when I can, but it's not nearly as often as I would like to.
What about big ones like you organize, like San Francisco or Chicago?
Honestly, I have not, simply because I don't have a lot of travel money. and it just takes a lot of time. I would literally need to take off work more than I am able to now, to travel out of town to go. It's something that we're talking about internally. We communicate with those prides and we share our experiences and what's happening and all that, but I have not been able to go and attend San Francisco, San Diego. I'd love to go see San Diego. One of these days, I'd really love to go to Atlanta.
Atlanta's fun. I used to live in Nashville. We went to Atlanta.
I hear so much about Atlanta Pride. I'd love to go see Atlanta Pride.
You're listening to Transpositive PDX, and we're talking today with Deborah Porta of Pride Northwest.
I actually had a couple of questions, and they do kind of both have to do with each other. So the first thing I wanted to ask, I know last year we started doing the Pride Festival in July, even though Pride Month is traditionally June, because the year before, Pride just happened to fall on Juneteenth. So I was wondering, is that still going to be the case this year? Is it still going to be in July, or what's the plan?
It is, Jay. We have wanted to move to July for a really long time, and the city has always told us no, because there was no space in July on the waterfront. This is in the before times, as we call them. And so we've been kind of stuck in June. And, a lot of people, I think, don't recognize that we have always overlapped with Juneteenth in Portland. It's always been the same weekend. It's also been the same weekend as the Delta Park Powwow, which is one of the largest Native celebrations on the entire West Coast. And we have wanted to move away from that weekend for a long time. It didn't always overlap with Father's Day. That's the one that folks would always bring up, but it didn't always overlap with Father's Day. And it definitely was not intentionally planned for Father's Day weekend. But we basically, what happened after 2022, we had not planned to approach the city again about changing to July until planning for 2024. And what happened is basically the city came to us with a request to change something about our event that was not something that we could change. They wanted us to change the day of something. And we're like, we can't do that. It would destroy the entire event. We can't do that. And it would have made us overlap even more strongly with what Juneteenth was doing. And we did, and that's not something we wanted to do, because we were in the midst of attempting to build relationships with the Juneteenth organizers. So the city is the one that made us aware of the fact that some dates in July had opened up. And so we jumped on it. We're like, we've been waiting for this for a long time. So we moved to July. And our intent is to stay in July. There are prides all over the world and all over the country that have never been in June. Our community is too big to be stuck in June. doesn't mean we don't honor the history, and it doesn't mean we don't recognize it, and it doesn't mean that our intent is to make Pride Month another month somewhere else. Our intent is to extend. So Pride Month begins in June, and we're going to celebrate Pride in Portland all the way through almost to the end of July. So we're going to extend the Pride season, not move it, with the Portland Pride Waterfront Festival and Parade kind of being the cap, if that makes sense. And we've already seen the beginning of the impact of that change in how many other events have begun getting planned around the community. We participated for the first time in the Juneteenth parade in 2022, which was that was a lot to pull off, but it was amazing. 2023, because we had changed our dates, we were also able to participate in the festival. And the very first thing we noticed at the Juneteenth festival is that there are a whole lot of other organizations that was also their first year, because they had been at Pride previously to that. Bro was there, Outside In was there, I don't know if the HRC was there, I don't remember, but there were other entities that they would typically be at Pride. And so us moving has also allowed a lot of other of our organizations to also begin building relationships and connections, and these being able to focus in this intersecting way that people would tend to force us to be separate around, as if we were competing with each other. And that's what we did not want to be part of, because it's not a competition for us. So us moving has allowed us literally to have time to talk to each other and build relationship and connection. Juneteenth Oregon organizers and the Juneteenth family will be present at Portland Pride for the first time this year. They're going to have their own space as well. We've had them on the main stage the last couple of years, but this year they're going to be able to be present all weekend, and that's not something that would have ever happened before.
That's great. Another advantage is that people who like to go to lots of prides can come to Portland's in July.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's you know, it makes a difference. It definitely makes a difference. Yeah, it's because Portland Pride has a significant impact on the city of Portland. It's an economic impact. It's a tourism impact. It's a community visibility impact. And moving to July has basically expanded the opportunity we have for elevating those things even more.
So, Deborah, can you tell us some of the highlights of the Pride Festival this year?
This year, we're super excited to have Jinx Monsoon as our headliner on Sunday of Pride weekend.
Jinx
is a native Portlander. I have not met Jinx before, and I'm looking forward to it. I know lots of people who know her. You know, she's one of the only or one of two-time winners for RuPaul. And the All-Stars. She's on Broadway. You know, she's multi-talented and came up in the Portland scene. So that's a big one. We implemented a second larger stage last year. We're excited to keep moving that forward and expanding what we're able to do with it. I think I've talked about this before. When it comes to the waterfront, there's only so large you can get without it becoming not really a great experience. Long and skinny is just not the best festival environment. So we're looking at opportunities to grow into downtown. We're partnering on an event with Blanchet House. The Northwest Gender Alliance is planning their first significant Pride weekend celebration of their own. They're very small, and their focus has been for a long time being present at Pride celebrations. Mm-hmm. So that's where their capacity is really gone. And so we're working with them to support you know, actually doing having something separate from being present at Pride and throwing a big party, really. So I'm excited about that one. And we're their fiscal sponsor, so we've had a long relationship with them. You know, and really, all of Pride excites me. I'm excited to have Juneteenth present. I'm excited about where our first queer makers market. We've put aside space on the festival site specifically for local queer artisans to come in and have a space, and it's not something we've been able to do before. So we're excited about initiating that and see where we can go with it. We're partnering with Hotel Zags on another night market. This is the thing about Pride, and this is where we go back to the origins of Pride as well, in understanding that one of the goals has always been about having economic impact for our community and lifting up our folks. So a lot of what we look at and plan around is how do we maximize the access that Pride Northwest has to whatever resources come our way to put it back out into the community. So the Makers Market is a big part of that, as well as some of the other partner events that we're doing. But yeah, it's, you know, we're just, you've got the community areas, we're hoping to expand those. But really our plans are more long-term in terms of expanding into downtown. Ultimately, I'd really love to take over Harvey Milk Street and close the whole thing down for Pride, but I don't think the city's quite ready for that. City of Portland.
would you move it from the waterfront?
No, we would grow from. The demand for Portland Pride just continues to grow. We went into a wait list for both exhibitors and the parade. 48 hours after registration opened. So we know our biggest concern is about whether or not the city of Portland is big enough for how large the Portland Pride Festival and parade could get.
So you would think about maybe having it in more than one place at the same time?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. So, and I think, you know, and I think that we've had lots of discussions with different people, and that's kind of the personality of Portland as well. Every part of Portland has its own personality and has its own, what will Pride look like manifesting there? And so in terms of Pride Northwest, ultimately what I would love to see is we've got the waterfront, and it's not about the waterfront going away, but it's about extending. Again, I think I bring up Harvey Milk. Think of a street fair style extending out from the waterfront, becoming a big street party down Harvey Milk, extending from the waterfront. Again, this is Deborah's dream. This is, you know, not something we have in place. I don't want a panicked call from the city. but yeah, there's just, I think, so much opportunity here for manifesting Pride. And there are just so many different ways to do that. And that's really our hope, is to be part of fostering making that happen and finding the opportunities for that to happen.
So Deborah, one of the things I've been hearing a lot one of the things we're hearing a lot about is people are really concerned about safety more than they used to be, I think. Mm-hmm. And they're especially concerned about our rights as LGBTQIA2S+ folks. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about those concerns, how are those being addressed at the Pride Festival this year?
Well, in general, you know, we're obviously very, very aware of what's happening around the country, and have long been aware of the fact that our own community here takes our place here for granted. We're not that far from having a lot of the same struggles like out in the open legal struggles, as we'd like to think we are. So it's something that we talk about a lot. We have a lot of folks moving to Oregon from other parts of the country, particularly Portland. Portland is considered kind of a sanctuary city for queer folks moving out of those spaces. A lot of people moving, you know, some people moving here with resources, most people moving here with few to no resources, but nobody's moving with community, really. They're literally picking up and running. And there's not enough about this in the news. So it doesn't, I think most people don't recognize how dire some of those situations have become. And Portland, the Portland region, is where a lot of folks are landing. So we are, in thinking about that, our plan isn't so much focused on the Portland Pride Festival as our response to it, but in our overall programming. For example, we're meeting with and planning with different partners for being able to hold periodic, you know, newcomer events, for lack of a better way to put it yet. Places to come and meet community and meet each other and connect and be safe in a place and be part of, have meet people to be connected to and move beyond the isolation that comes from moving to a new place. We're working on a, you know, queer specific sort of resource guide for you, safe spaces, providers, could be everything from a coffee shop all the way up to, you know, resource providers, you know, Equi, these folks. So we're working on some version of that. That's a longer term plan. You'd think it would be pretty easy to throw that together, but not if you want to be intentional about it. We're working on connections around the state and sort of really building this collaborative communication-based process so that we move past this isolated thing that our community tends to be stuck with in a lot of times, you know. But a lot of our effort is around raising the visibility of this issue, working on bringing together resources to support newcomer folks, provide space for community to manifest, and looking longer term at the kinds of connections that folks will need in order to be successful in a new place. And I know that sounds pretty vague, but that's kind of where it's at.
No, that's. Do you talk with folks involved in prides in other states? Do you talk to each other much?
It depends. It's interesting that over the years, that can be complicated just because it's, you know, I've been around Pride Northwest for a long time, and that's not the norm. People come and go from Pride a lot and frequently because it's a lot of work. They get burned out. Mm-hmm. So relationships can be interesting, but we connect with folks up in Washington, down in California. The Inner Pride organization, it's not that we're not actively engaged with them, but it's not a primary focus, but the relationships, the talking to, I communicate fairly regularly with a couple of folks down in San Diego, San Francisco, Sacramento.
I just wonder how people in other states, especially states where there seems to be, you know, a front facing assault on LGBTQIAS plus rights, like Tennessee or Florida. You know, how are those folks handling that situation?
Well, I mean, they're very much in advocacy phase at this point. There's security becomes a huge issue. It's unlikely that larger prides would be forced to cancel for security reasons, but it doesn't mean it can't happen. And a couple have come close. It's more about the mid to smaller prides. Those are more concerning, including here in Oregon. Last year, there were several prides around here.
Oh, I know. The Oregon City Planning Group for the Pride Festival down there. And, you know, it had to be rescheduled twice. And one of the times that it got postponed was because Proud Boys. And they got into an open brawl with folks from Oregon City Pride last year. I mean, this is an event that was very open and welcoming families to attend. You know, hate messages to end up moving it to Clackamas Community College about 3 months after Pride Month, just for the safety of the people involved in it.
Yeah, oh yeah. That was not the only one, right? There's Umpqua Valley ran into some pretty significant issues. You know, even an elementary school here in Portland had to change their Pride celebration because of so much doxing and so many threats. That's what I mean by what I said earlier about it. Oregon is not as comfortable as we'd like to think we are. And so I've had so many more conversations especially the last 2 years, but really, you know, ongoing from Pride organizers around the state and, you know, planning for security, how to engage with what might not be a friendly city town infrastructure, you know, in terms of a permit and this kind of stuff. That has not been as hard for some folks as they were afraid it would be, which is good. That's a good sign. But it could happen at any moment that literally someone in some township in Oregon could totally say, no, you can't have Pride. And so what a lot of the work that's happening right now is this relationship piece, this connecting and building allies, and really just sort of organizing around creating space and the pieces that go into creating that space, and how do they respond to safety concerns, and how do they plan for, you know, just pick something on the list, right? That's a huge concern and a huge issue right now. There are lots of really good things happening as well. There's a lot of progress happening. But this whole idea around the unknown of where pushback or up to attack may come from, it can be very intimidating. I mean, it's intimidating even for Pride, for Portland. It's something that we look at and think about and get confronted with every single year. People just don't think about it because we're so big now. Really what we're hoping, what my focus has been, this is where I go back to this relationship piece of making connections and building relationships with organizers around the state so that we can communicate with each other, so that we can share what we're doing, what's working, what's not working. How do we support each other? What are the resources that we can connect each other to? You know, because Portland is the largest pride in our region, we take that role really seriously around utilizing our experience and our processes and our connections to support and help other Pride organizers around the state. That's a big piece of what we do. Definitely.
So I'm sorry, could I ask another question? And it kind of ties back into my previous question. So in the past, I know there's been a lot of like BIPOC saying that they don't feel as included in Pride, and disabled folks saying they don't feel as included in Pride or it's not as accessible to them. So I was wondering, are you taking any measures to help people feel more included and help things be more accessible?
Yes, we are. That is, that's a very specific focus of ours. And one of the reasons that one of the other benefits of moving to July, because I don't know if y'all were able to attend in 2023, but 2023, we were able to install an accessibility sidewalk all the way down the festival from one end to the other. We would not be able to do that with wet, muddy ground. So we're super excited about that. And that is and obviously we'll have that again this year. We communicate consistently with the city around recognizing that what they think of as accessible when it comes to the waterfront is not actually accessible. The grounds of the waterfront are I'm not even sure what the right word is, bumpy, sandy. There are all these issues that go into the ground that we are not allowed to address. So we're working with the city about, okay, well, how do we address this then? Because it makes the event inaccessible for a lot of folks. Even thinking about, because of the move to July, it's warmer, could be downright hot like it was in 2023. So how do we're adding, you know, shaded seating areas, water misters around the festival, engaging our partners, making sure that there are lots and lots of folks passing out water. We've rearranged the placement of some things so that there's not as much direct sun, and those kinds of things. And we'll keep working on those pieces as we go along. We began working last year with an outfit who specializes in creating resources for particularly folks dealing with mobility issues around how to plan going someplace, how to plan, you know, a trip. And, you know, we published a sort of Pride accessibility guide for last year. And this year we're hoping to grow that. And they will do everything. They worked with us around talking about, you know, what is Pride Northwest doing? What can folks anticipate? What can folks plan around? But they also work with businesses to identify, you know, what does your space look like? What can someone expect who wants to go to your establishment? And then also working with them to implement what tend to be pretty simple changes that they could make to make their spaces more accessible, and then creating a guide that helps people plan their days so that they know what they're looking at. So that's something that we'll definitely continue doing. And we also have an amazing ASL interpreting team that is not the same team every year, but we've worked with a coordinator, Deb, for a long time, and have built up the ASL interpretation for Pride into something that that honestly we're hoping can be replicated at other Prides. There are ASL interns, students who come and learn in the process. They participate. I'm working with Deb on a more formal structure for that. But we've expanded, you know, creating deaf community spaces at the festival. And we'll continue building on that and working on that as well. So those are the big pieces for that. And I apologize, there was a first part to your question that I know I haven't answered.
Oh, I was also asking about what efforts are being made to help BIPOC feel more included.
So That's happening on a couple of different levels. And, you know, we have long had relationships with Black, Indigenous, and people of color organizers in for a long time. As I mentioned, you know, David Martinez was one of the very first conversations that I ever had when I became board president. This has been something that we've been addressing, building relationships, learning, implementing for a long time. That's why the move away from Juneteenth weekend was so significant for us, because it was such an obstacle, unintended on all sides, between an obstacle to being able to build relationships. So in terms of tangibles that we're doing, first and foremost, we look internally at our own processes. Who's being included in conversations? Who's included in leadership positions? Who is making decisions? What are the relationships that we're prioritizing? How are we prioritizing our resources in terms of, for example, underwriting and creating opportunity for Black, Indigenous, and queer folks of color organizations to be visible and present at Pride? We underwrite a lot of that, whether it's a lower fee and or no fee. We have guests to come in to be able to access and take advantage of that space without resources necessary from those organizations. In terms of, you know, the Pride stage, and the rest of the staff will tell you, because it's a little bit of a running joke, the Pride stage is not the most interesting part of Pride for me, because it's just not where I live. But the representation of being on that stage is what matters to me. And that's a huge focus of ours in terms of opening up and ensuring access to the stage and who it is that's centered there, whether it's talent, voice, producer, you know, you name it. And so that's a big focus of ours for the last several years, and that just continues to grow. And a large part of our focus, again, is everything. This is something to remember about Pride Northwest. The Portland Pride Waterfront Festival and Parade is the largest thing that we do. It's not the only thing that we do. So everything that we do in answer to some of these things isn't just focused on Pride. So when we're thinking about how we're utilizing our resources in sponsoring, supporting, helping pay for, et cetera, through the year, because we do that, Black, Indigenous, and queer folks of color, whether it's an event, a grassroots organization, someone needing some rental assistance, whatever it might be, those are our priorities when we're thinking about where we're putting our resources. Also, in terms of, you know, I mentioned earlier that the Portland Pride Waterfront Festival and Parade has a significant economic impact on the city. And we prioritize ensuring that, you know, if we're paying for something, if there is an option for, you know, for example, we began working last year with a small local balloon and event company to do some balloon art at the festival, that kind of thing. And it's a small Black lesbian owned outfit out in Hillsboro. I believe Hillsboro. So just putting our resources that come to Pride Northwest directly back into the community and prioritizing queer Black owned businesses, et cetera, Black Indigenous queer queer communities of color, in looking at the businesses and where to put our actual resources. That's a big part of our model.
Deborah, how can people, is it too late for people to get involved in the Pride Festival this year? Like if somebody wants a booth, or if they want to march in the parade, or if they want to volunteer, are there ways for people to?
Oh yeah, it's never too late to volunteer. So Portland Pride, we have two websites. One is pridenw.org, and that's our organizational website. That's our year-round website. PortlandPride.org is our event website that comes live during Pride, and that's where you're going to find all of the Pride events. That's where you're going to find, where to sign up to volunteer, reserve a booth, parade, etc. I will say that we have a fairly deep wait list for both the festival and the parade, but go in and get on the wait list so that you're in the system.
You have a wait list for the parade?
Oh, we've had a wait list for the parade since like 2016. Yeah, it's a
mean people have been waiting to get into the parade since 2016?
No. Every year we go into a wait list for the parade.
Yeah.
But if you I just encourage folks to go in and register and get on the wait list.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's if you're not on the wait list, then there's no chance, right? Because the wait list is where, as things become open, because as we get closer, some people, especially exhibitors, some folks may drop out because they realize their schedule doesn't work and this kind of thing. So things change and open. And as we're working through all the pieces, we start pulling from the wait list.
If you want to march in the parade and there's a wait list, can you buddy up with somebody who's maybe sort of like your organization?
Oh yeah, totally. What I encourage folks to do is look at a group or an organization or company or whatever that that matches you. I'm not saying that very well, but you know what I mean. And reach out to them and ask to be part of the group. The reason we encourage that is what we don't really encourage is just simply showing up the day of and joining someone's group, mostly because the nature of who we are as a community, if we don't know who it is that just stepped into our space, we don't know if we're safe or not. And so we don't want folks to be thrown off by people they don't know just all of a sudden joining their space. So we just encourage people to respect each other and reach out and make a connection and totally join up with someone who's in there.
Well, Deborah, we're just about at the end of the show.
I wanted to ask, I'm sorry, very important question. Do we have a date set for when Pride is going to be this year?
Oh yeah. Pride in Portland Pride 2024 is July 20th and 21st.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Transpositive. We've been talking with Deborah Porta from Pride Northwest. Have a great night, everyone, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you, Deborah. Thank
you.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time. But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your co-workers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KBOO. At KBOO, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KBOO want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KBOO supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
Bedroom surprise.
90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.